Cutting the noise, mapping the moves, explaining what matters and what does not. Welcome to The War Room with Dr. David Katz, your weekly briefing on military strategy and the conflict shaping our world.
Welcome to The War Room. My name's David Katz, and tonight I'm happy to say I have Howard Saxteen with me in studio, and he doesn't really need an introduction, but he likes to be introduced as a lawyer by training and entrepreneur by profession. Howard Saxteen is the self-proclaimed king of social media, explosive political activist, ringmaster of Zoom, and official photographer of life itself. Welcome, Howard.
Hello, Dave. Nice to be back on air.
So, Howard, the reason why you're here tonight is that we are going to discuss the role of media in what I call hybrid war, but allow me to define it. So let's define it so we can set a bit of context for what you're going to give us some of your expert advice on. So I would define hybrid warfare as the coordinated use of military, political, economic, legal, cyber, informational, and social tools to weaken an opponent without necessarily crossing the threshold of open war. Its purpose is not always to defeat an enemy on the battlefield, but to confuse, very important, to confuse decision-making, divide society, delegitimize institutions, shape public opinion, and make the target state act against its own interests. In this sense, media, social media, influencers, lawfare, propaganda, and disinformation are not side issues. They are often central weapons in the struggle. Do you agree with that definition?
I do agree with the definition, and I think we have to say that the role of traditional media has really declined completely.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You're talking the legacy media.
The legacy media. There was a time where you believed that the New York Times was the newspaper of record.
Yes.
What you believed in the New York Times, that was the gospel.
Yes.
And now social media has democratized all of that. And when you go particularly to the younger generation today and you say, where do you get your news from? They're not watching television. They're not reading newspapers. They're not going onto the News 24s or the Daily Maverick website.
Yes.
They're somehow picking up everything that they know about whether it's life in general or warfare or international conflict. They're picking up somehow off TikTok and Instagram.
And but that in itself, Howard, is not a problem. I don't see that as a problem because if we look at the legacy media of the past, where that held the floor, that held a monopoly, let's say, on the information. It was also biased to a certain extent, and it presented a certain point of view. Now, as you called it, the democratization, we've pushed it down. That you know, anybody in a studio, somewhere along the line, that can speak properly, can put across his point of view. There are the challenges to that, but it's still biased in itself. I mean, whether it's controlled by big business or it's controlled by there's control involved.
So, well, everything has a perspective.
Yes.
But we've moved away from even professional journalists, whether they were biased or not biased,
yes,
to a 15-year-old kid with a microphone.
Yes.
And somehow that kid has as much credibility as the New York Times used to have. And I want to take one example.
Yeah.
Who is the most powerful person in news today? Any idea of a name?
Well, it's got to be one of these social media guys like Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens Joe Rogan.
Well,
is another one.
If you go to actual news, the most powerful newscaster today is actually someone you've probably never heard of, called Dylan Page. Early 20s, born in South Africa, raised in the UK.
Okay, I haven't heard of him. No.
Little blonde, good-looking kid.
Yes.
And 20 million people get their news, yes, from Dylan Page.
Staggering numbers, way above anything on the legacy media.
Higher than a CNN, higher than a BBC.
Yes.
And this kid is now telling 20 million people what you think about everything happening in the world.
Yes.
It's not news, it's entertainment.
Yes.
And when you ask even Americans in age 18 to 35, what is your main source of news? The late night comedy hosts, the comedy centrals, that's where they're getting news from.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've broken down all of these structures, whether you like the legacy media or not, but we've, yes, broken down all of those structures and we've handed over to people to tell us what's happening in the world.
We've leveled the playing field, basically.
But people of no credibility whatsoever.
Yes.
And,
yes,
you know, the comedians on late night television, people like Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart, they say, you know, don't listen to us. We're comedians. And yet they are the main source of news for an entire generation.
Yes, no, I agree with you 100%. In itself, if you look at it in absolute terms, with the shift now from legacy media over to the social type of media, where the playing fields are level, anybody with a microphone and a decent internet connection now can have a say. It takes a bit of skill. I mean, you don't get 20 million followers if you're not charismatic. You've got to have something. Investigative journalism, as you've said, the whole idea of investigating before you report on something, I mean, seems to be dead in the water as we speak. So we've got a bunch of opinions out there. It's just a bunch of opinions. But and I agree with you, I hear there's a danger in this type of thing. There isn't actually. Where do you get your news from? What is the truth? But I'm saying there's something more sinister at play over here, is that there is a certain amount of control on social media that is not just a bunch of kids going out there and putting their point of view across and being court jesters and whatever the situation is. It's controlled as part of warfare, where a state will use its military in one context and will use social media in another context to weaken its opponent or get its point of view across. What do you feel about that?
So I think we're seeing it today in the war between the United States and Iran.
Yes.
If you go to your average person on the street and say, who's winning the war? The answer is, I'm not really sure.
Yes.
And you ask that question, Iran has been militarily defeated. They may be able to shoot at a few ships. They may be able to have a few motorboats out in. They still have 20% of their missiles, but they've been militarily defeated.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. Absolutely.
But when you ask the average person, they're not sure what the answer is. And when you go to America, Iran has been very strategic in the way that they've done things. They realized that the one leverage they had was the price of oil, and they could control the price of oil by blockading the Straits of Hormuz, that, as we've seen. The other thing was to continuously undermine the Trump administration in the eyes of many Americans and make this war uncomfortable for the American president, and therefore pressure on him to end the conflict. And I think when we're talking about social media, there are people who fit into one of three categories.
Yes.
The first category are the state actors. A Qatar or an Iran or someone else is actually paying for posts. You see a lot of AI-generated media out there, lots of fake images, fake videos, a lot of that coming from state actors.
Yes.
And we saw that in particular, if you remember, during the first Trump-Biden fight, or Trump-Hillary Clinton fight, with a huge amount of Russian interference in that election. And when they actually analyzed what happened in social media, the Russians weren't backing either of the sides.
Yes.
Though their objective was to try to create break down social cohesion in America. So they were putting money behind Black Lives Matter, and they were putting money behind the non-Black Lives Matter. They were in favor of gun control, and they were against gun control. They funded all of these social media campaigns in order to break down the unity and the cohesiveness of the American state and to turn people against each other. And we know in South Africa, there's in fact an element of that as well.
Yes.
The DA keeps on saying that the ANC has encouraged, and that Fikile Mbalula, the Secretary General of the ANC, has met with Russian intelligence to try run the PSYOPs campaigns relating to South African elections.
Interesting.
So the first element is state-manipulated media. And as part of that is they go and they pay influencers. Whether it's the Qatari government using Al Jazeera as its mouthpiece and employing journalists around the world who are loyal to their paymasters, and then there's some South Africans who sit internationally who fit very much into that category.
Yes.
But that is a state element of state control where they are actively waging war. That's category number one.
Yes, and that is part of hybrid warfare.
Absolutely.
So there's a control, you agree with me. These things don't happen by mistake. Some of these social influencers out there don't say things by mistake. There's a concerted, there's a hymn sheet that they're singing to, and that hymn sheet is controlled by places like Qatar, for instance.
And Iran.
Yes.
And you saw it during the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that we recently had.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking of one South African fashion and beauty icon who has something like 20 million followers on social media, and suddenly, out of the blue, she's never spoken about politics in her life. Yeah. But out of the blue, every day for 7 days, she posted anti-Israel material.
Yes.
And on day number 7, the contract clearly ended because she deleted all of those posts.
She was back to the fashion parade.
She was back to fashion and makeup and beauty, which is her area of expertise. But she was paid. And the question we have to ask is, who paid her?
Yes. So it's also in the case, and I don't like naming names, but let's name it. So Tucker Carlson is one of those who's done a complete 180-degree turn. From becoming pro-MAGA and that type of thing, he's now singing the praises of Hamas and Hezbollah.
And has a home in Qatar now.
And has a home in Qatar.
And so,
can join the dots.
You can definitely join the dots. So when we speak about the three categories, the one are the state actors.
Yes.
The second category are the activists.
Right.
The Muslim community feel deeply connected to the Palestinians, to Iran. And despite the gross human rights violations, despite the Iranian massacres of between 30 and 40,000 Iranian citizens on the 8th and 9th of January of this year, they're all in. They're posting. They don't care if it's true or if it's not true. They are going to protect the Iranian regime. They're going to protect the Hamas regime. It makes no difference if Hamas are raping people, are massacring people, are the worst human rights abusers in the world. It makes no difference to them because ideologically, they are activists and they're going to do whatever it takes. And what they post, they don't care if it's true or not. These pictures of Tel Aviv on fire, the yes. Ben Gurion airport being destroyed, of Bibi Netanyahu being dead. It makes no difference to them at all if they're telling the truth or not. They're involved in a war. They are the fighters in a battle. They may not have guns and they may not have tanks,
absolutely,
but they have signed up to ideologically be fighters in the battle, and it's often jihad related. It's the local jihadists that you meet on the street, the guy that sits next to you in the coffee shop, the worker in the bank right next to you who feels deeply committed to an issue. And it happens on all sides because it happens on our side as well.
Yes, absolutely.
We often don't want to veer away from the truth, but the other side has absolutely no qualms about lying. And we know if you repeat a lie often enough, people start believing it. That was the Goebbels doctrine.
No, absolutely. But these people also not acting as independents. They are so unpaid, can we say that? Unpaid state actors.
I don't think they're taking direction.
No, but they certainly...
But they see themselves as warriors in a battle.
Yes.
And they pick up their weapon.
But the agenda has been set cleverly already. So the agenda has been set by the state actors, and these people are now following the agenda.
Correct.
That's basically what is happening out there. They're not coming up with their own material. They are just reinforcing the agenda.
But I want to speak about...
out of, let's say, misguided allegiance to an ideology.
Yeah, but they're ideologues, and they may not be fighters with bullets and guns, but yes. They're warriors with their keyboards.
Yes. Yes.
And the third category, which I think is really important, which people often forget, and these are the war profiteers.
Yes.
And they move from conflict to conflict. They know. They earn money. YouTube will pay you for the number of clicks you get. TikTok will pay you for the number of views that you get.
Yes.
Facebook will pay you. And it makes no difference to them. They are the war profiteers trying to provoke you with anger, with emotion, with sentiment. They want you to fight. Because the more you fight with them, the more you comment with them, the more clicks that they get. And every click means money to them. They are the war profiteers of our generation.
These are the clickbait guys.
The clickbait guys. It makes no difference to them how preposterous the story is at all. They want to make sure that they can rage bait you into a reaction. Because that's how they're going to make money. And we've seen online the exact same people who are posting about the DRC and its war with M23 rebels. Mm. Suddenly, they're posting about England and the right wing in England. And then they'll go on to football riots in France after last week's football game. And then they're in the Gaza war. Mm. And then they're in Ukraine. And they will follow whatever it is to try rage bait you into an argument, into a fight. And that's how they generate money. In the old days, people used to look down on the war profiteers because those were the people who made money, extortionary amounts of money, by selling weapons, selling food into people who were starving. Today, they sell you a social media argument in return for cash.
Okay. On that note, we're going to sell an advert and come back to a very, very interesting discussion.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to the War Room. My name's David Katz. I'm in conversation with Howard Saxteen, and we're listening about the third style of social media. Let's say hybrid warfare is the rage baiters. The people who make money out of, instead of selling arms like in the old days, out of conflict, they are selling misinformation. Or they sell any bad news, because bad news, Howard, is a hell of a lot more sexy than good news, let's face it. If you see a decent headline about bad news, you're going to want to read it, guaranteed.
So the important thing isn't not just good or bad. It must actually tug at your emotions. It must make you to want to act. They don't want you to be depressed and sad. They want you to click on a button. They want you to fight with someone else online. And that's exactly what they're after. So if you take people like Reedy Klaibe, for example, and I'm not going to speculate which of the three categories she fits into, because maybe she fits into all three, I'm not sure.
Yes.
But she loves the fact that our community goes and argues with her, because she's making money out of all of this. And so the more we argue, the more we fight. So sometimes the best weapon we have is silence.
So we're going to come to that, the countermeasures. Let's leave that for the moment. But we need to understand what the countermeasures are. We are at a disadvantage when it comes to countering this, is because I believe that these guys conducting this type of social media warfare don't aim to put a valid point of view across, only in an alternative point of view across. It's much easier, and you've touched on it. You've almost said it. Is their sole aim is confusion? If they can confuse an issue. So if there was a solid issue, and the majority of the population believed in a certain ideology or certain viewpoint or even a fact of history, their aim now is not to convince you not to believe it or believe an alternative. It's just to confuse the hell out of what's going on at the end of the day. So their path is a hell of a lot simpler than us guys trying to counteract this, where we are trying to present a truth, and all they're trying to do is confuse the issue. You agree with that?
I do agree with that. And I think we have to, for example, look at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict over the last few years.
Let's look at that.
Because if you look at all of the protests in America, who printed the signs? Who paid for the food? Who delivered the tents?
Yeah.
None of that happens by accident. None of it is organic. Someone paid.
Yes.
And in America, if you follow someone, I think it's called Nate Friedman, he goes to each of these encampments and he identifies the people. I know that guy. And he works for this organization, and his salary is $80,000 a year.
Not a student.
Not a student. And you can go, and it's $300 a protest if I go to protest. And you know, the amazing thing happened. Glencore officers are in Melrose Arch. There's a group of anti-Israel activists who want Glencore to stop selling coal to Israel. And
I think I've seen this on my way to gym. When I walk in, is 10 or 15 people with placards screaming at the robots just outside the Melrose Arch Virgin Active.
The same group. And there I was one day sitting at Starbucks, and they've got a microphone, and they're really disturbing me at Starbucks. So go to see what's happening. And there are about 25 people. I mean, they have no support at all.
Yeah.
And of them, about 10, 15 are wearing kafir. A lot of them obviously wearing traditional Muslim gear. Yeah. And about 10 or 15 black people.
Yes.
And they shout, free, free. And of course, the black people are supposed to reply, Palestine.
Yes.
And they don't. They go free, free, and there's silence. The black people are standing there holding placards, but they don't know the answer is Palestine. Then they scream, from the river to the sea, and the black people are all chatting to each other.
Yeah.
And so I was with an African friend of mine, and I said, please just go speak to them and ask them what they're doing here.
And they should pay me because even I know some of those answers.
Exactly. And he says, no, they came and they collected them and they gave them T-shirts and they gave them placards and they gave them lunch and they gave them a few hundred rand. And they
rent a riot.
But they forgot to teach them the slogans. And for many of these things that we sing, none of it is organic. When you ask, we're seeing some of the worst human rights disasters in the world. You know, in the Russian-Ukrainian war, how many people have been killed?
No, it runs into hundreds of thousands.
Well, it actually runs well over a million.
Yes.
And no one cares anymore. If you look,
we can go through, Howard, we can go through all the conflicts that are worldwide about, and the ones that nobody cares about. We can talk about the Rohingyas of China. We can talk about the South Sudanese. I mean, these are not in anywhere near on the agenda.
Well, why does no one care?
That's a good point.
And
why not?
Let's talk about what happened in Iran in the beginning. We saw probably one of the worst massacres of the modern era taking place in January in Iran. Between 30 and 40,000 people were mowed down by their own government, massacred, and the Iranian government continues to hang multiple people today. It's the worst human rights violation in the world, and we don't see any protests.
I wish I could put, Howard, I could put it down to hypocrisy, but it's more sinister than that. It is. There is a lot of hypocrisy. If you look at a person like Anna Kasparian, for interest, and you dispute the figures in Gaza, where there's 70,000 deaths, and you dare dispute that or try and impute a number of actual
militants
that form part of that number, she's going to turn around straight away and say, no, these are sound figures. These are figures that come out of the Gaza guys that release these figures, whatever. So not in dispute. I accept them 100%. When she was presented with the 40 or 50,000 that were now massacred in Iran during the riots, she turned around and said, where do you get the figures from? I mean, these figures are absolutely nonsense. There's no proof. So part of the problem is a sheer hypocrisy. Absolute hypocrisy.
It's not just hypocrisy.
No, it's not.
Someone has paid for the demonstration.
Yes.
And you have to ask who and why.
Yeah.
And that applies to everything. And I want to take South Africa as an example. You know, we've been seeing these March and March riots that have been taking place till March, but it's been a year of a build-up. Who is behind it?
Yes.
Who's paying for this?
Yeah.
Who is funding these anti-immigrant xenophobia riots that we're seeing in front of us? They don't just happen organically. We're heading towards an election. Our elections are on the 4th of May, local government elections. Suddenly xenophobia or Afrophobia, as some people prefer to call it, has become the fore. The president last night has a family meeting. He addresses the nation. We've changed the agenda of what he has to speak about. He's now addressing the nation about xenophobia, about illegal immigrants. It's become the biggest issue in the campaign. So who put it on the agenda?
Yes.
Who's paying? If we don't know, you know.
Who benefits?
If you know what they say in poker?
Yep.
If you don't know who the sharks are, you are the fish. And the same applies to everything political. How did this suddenly manifest itself?
Well, let's explore that. Are you saying that there are forces out there that are trying to distract us from the local government elections, where we know that the ruling party is going to be a bloodbath for them? So, does it pay them now to have this type of distraction, where they can sort of remove some of the items like potholes, for instance, off the agenda and now turn around and create a problem and offer solutions?
I think this is enormously damaging to the ANC, so I don't think it's the ANC.
So who's doing this?
I'm not going to answer that question because I don't know the answer. But if we're not asking those questions, then we've actually failed in all of this.
Yes, absolutely.
These things are not always organic, and someone drives them, and someone is manipulating every one of us. And we have to realize that when we pick up or go on to News 24, someone has made the decision which articles will appear, how high they will appear on the list, which journalist will they use, what angle will they take.
Who's been blacklisted?
When, you know, let's talk about that blacklisting.
Mm.
When it came down, and Paula Sleer tells us the story, when it came down, for example, to the SABC, Paula Sleer was reporting from Israel, and suddenly she discovers she's been fired.
Yes.
Because Snooki Zikalala, an ANC plant, an ANC activist put into the SABC,
yes,
decides that Paula Sleer's version of what's happening in the ANC.
She was reporting, just to inform the listeners, she was reporting, I think, on Yasser Arafat's funeral.
Correct.
He had recently died in France. His body was going to be repatriated back to the West Bank. And she was in the vicinity watching this whole thing unfold and reporting back to the SABC. I think that's the backstory.
Exactly. And she suddenly discovers she's been fired by the SABC. They won't take her stories.
Yes.
Because there's a political agenda. Because being Jewish, they don't believe she can fulfill the political agenda that the SABC has. Mm. They blacklist her. They blacklist Thabo Mbeki's brother.
Moletsi
Mbeki.
Mm.
So what you're seeing on SABC has been manipulated by the political appointees who are in there. And we have to ask the same thing with ENCA. Who is behind? We know, for example, that National Intelligence employs vast numbers of journalists in every newspaper in the country. They're there to do what the government or National Intelligence ask them to do. Everything. We're being manipulated. The algorithm on social media, so there was a study done in the United States on TikTok of what issues TikTok will promote. Now, whether it's Instagram or whether it's X or whether it's Facebook, they all want you just to engage as much as possible. The algorithm isn't around on them to try to tell you something specific. They want you to be rage baited. They want you to interact. They want you to send a message. They want you to like. They want you to hate. They want you to interact.
They want volatility, like on the stock exchange. You want movement. Yeah.
But TikTok is slightly different
mm-hmm.
because the Chinese Communist Party have a slightly different idea. And they've done studies in the United States before TikTok has now been bought and integrated into the United States. But the algorithm on TikTok promotes certain ideas and suppresses certain ideas. What appears on that feed is not organic. It's been designed specifically that you will have a very specific worldview. And that's why the Trump administration, and even before that, the Biden administration's idea is we have to control this because we can't allow the Chinese Communist Party to dictate to America what is being seen by the youth of America.
Yes.
But if we're going into all of this blind,
but they were going to buy, for the American market the majority share of TikTok.
I think when last I heard it was Larry Ellison who was going to put up the money for this.
Yes.
But it is really important for you to understand that someone's making that decision. What appears in the Star newspaper, Iqbal survey. How did he get money from the PRC under Jacob Zuma? To support Jacob Zuma and oppose Cyril Ramaphosa. How does, for example, that newspaper, which only has, I looked it up last week, apparently there are only about 4,500 people who pay for the Star newspaper.
Mm.
It's inconceivable. You can't run a business like that.
Yeah.
Who's paying for it?
Doesn't come from the advertising.
Exactly. There is an agenda there. Who's paying for that newspaper? Who's controlling what we're listening to tonight on Chai FM? What we're discussing? Everyone is, you think you're coming in as an open listener, willing to hear ideas, but someone else is making those decisions for you. And if you're blind to that, you're being manipulated.
No, there's absolutely no doubt is that people should be aware of the fact that there is an element of manipulation behind all these forums, all these platforms. It's not just simply that you can go on and put your point of view, which is going to carry as much weight as somebody else's point of view. It's all, as you say, it all depends on the algorithms about who they choose as voice is going to rise to the top. There's the funding aspect in it also, is that certain people are funded, certain people remain unfunded. It's an unfair playing field where a lot of people think that due to the democratization of social media, and I put that in inverted commas, that's your term, not mine, that the playing fields are a hell of a lot more level, but maybe not. Maybe not. There's a lot behind the scenes that we don't know about.
So one of the things you have to do is to decide who you trust. So let's take the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, for example, or the American-Iran conflict. Who do you read? Who are the people
It's not a difficult decision, actually, Howard. It's not difficult, actually. To seek out the truth is basically, if you've got the resources and the know-how and you sort of triangulate. You go to reputable sources and you triangulate.
Who are your reputable sources?
No, there's a lot of different sources out there.
I must tell you, I don't think that's as easy as you imagine to find a reputable source.
Well, so historically, let's talk from a historical point of view. It's not difficult to obtain different information from different areas, triangulate all those things to come up with a version that is close to the truth. Historically wise, that can be done. You go to the primary documentation, you see both sides of the story, and you do that type of investigation. The point is investigation. There used to be investigative journalism out there. It's no longer there anymore. If you want to solve a murder case, you need to do the investigation. You need to interview the players, the people. You see the circumstances at the end of the day. You apply your mind, you apply your intellect to it, and you've got what they call in the accounting profession a professional skepticism to the things that are coming through. And if you train your mind in that way, you will soon pick up who's talking nonsense and who's not talking nonsense.
At the risk of showing our age,
yes,
we grew up in an era where we got the news the next day because we waited for the newspaper to arrive.
Yes.
But we believed that wasn't in fact good enough because someone only had 24 hours to mull over a piece of news. And how could you really understand it?
Yes.
So we used to subscribe to things called Time Magazine and Newsweek magazine because that had a weeks-long perspective.
Well, news was your news. It means it was immediate. It was the first shot. It was the first bite at the apple.
But the first bite 30 years ago was waiting till the next day.
24 hours.
Or if you really wanted to be informed, waiting a week. Agreed. Until Time Magazine. And now?
No. After Time Magazine, there was another. Then the historians came in after Time Magazine, and they really got it going 30 years after the event, and eventually the truth would come out. Yes, that's the way it used to work.
Have you picked up a newspaper and seen anything in it that you didn't know the day before?
Not really. I mean, newspapers are passé, are they not?
They are passé, but the news is old. Yes. You've already know all of that news because, you know, we used to go onto news websites, News 24 dead, things like the Daily Maverick.
Yeah. But there's supposed to be analysis behind it.
But, you know, the Daily Maverick is an opinion piece. It's not a newspaper. It's not a credible source of news. Yes. It is highly opinionated, highly directed.
I agree with you, yes.
Opinion masquerading as news.
Yes.
But where do we go now? We're not even going onto those News 24 Daily Maverick websites. We now all are following on Twitter, or we're following on WhatsApp groups. Like, I belong to the Open Source Intelligence WhatsApp group, OSINT613. I don't know if you follow him. Probably one of the best open source intelligence guys on what's happening in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Today, ex-intelligence analyst, my friends and family who are in Israeli intelligence tell me they follow OSINT613.
Okay.
But he's sending out maybe 500, sometimes 600 WhatsApps a day of what's happening within the Middle East region. I'm more informed than anyone in the world because I'm reading 600 WhatsApps of one-line pieces of information as they happen, when they happen. I'm not going to wait till CNN tells me an hour later or sometimes 2 hours later. I know that news already. Yes. The immediacy, I feel like I'm in the battleground. We've changed from going the historians, the weekly view, the next day view, the daily view, to now, if it happened 30 seconds ago, I need to be in that fight.
Yes, it's become the technology has allowed us now to get our feed instantaneously. We don't have patience now to wait for perfection is the enemy of good enough. So the news that we are getting, the immediacy of it is sort of good enough to us, and that's where we leave it. It's not really examined after that.
So. And we're now doing the blow by blow. We're not seeing the full story.
Yes.
A missile was shot at 6:32 p.m.
I hear you, but I must say, during this, and I'm reasonably informed on military aspects. I mean, my so-called area of expertise is the operational conduct of war and the tactical conduct of war, and sometimes at the strategic level also. And I've spent years and years and years studying towards it. And I must say to you that the latest conflict, I didn't understand anything that was going on because of the amount of noise coming through. There was so much noise that you couldn't sort the chaff from the actual news that was coming out. So even experts are presented with a problem of not being able. The immediacy is there. We get all those things immediately, but the problem is at the end of the day is that we can't. It's too much information in the wrong type of information. Before you answer, let's just go to the advertisers quickly so we can get the show on the road.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to the War Room. My name is David Katz. I'm in conversation with Howard Saxteen. We are talking about the confusion. And I don't think confusion is a mistake, Howard. I think that's exactly what's intended. If you can confuse an issue, you've almost won the war just based on that. If the population or the people following it, or even the experts, as I've said, are unable to discern what the truth is, you are well on your way to winning the conflict. What do you say about that?
So I want to use a practical example.
Yep.
It just so happened after the 2024 elections, I was the back channel between a number of the political parties in their negotiation with the ANC. I had a pretty good take of what was going on. I was passing messages up and down. I was involved in some of the haggling over who would get what position.
Okay.
And it just so happens that I get invited to go hear some of the experts speak. And you must understand, these experts, they're charging 50,000, 100,000 rand a talk.
Mm.
And I'm sitting there watching it. I say, oh my God, these people know nothing. They have no idea what's happening. And when you watch some of the people appearing on CNN or appearing on BBC, and they say, this is the expert. This was a military general 30 years ago.
Mm.
And therefore, they're an expert. And you think, these people are absolutely clueless. They don't understand.
No, they've lost their credibility.
And if you look on Twitter, one of the most influential people on Twitter, Mario Norfolk, big news channel, tens of millions of followers on Twitter, Lebanese. Now we can very clearly see where he stands in the conflict.
Mm, mm.
And he's interviewing these experts, CIA experts who've been fired by the CIA for incompetence. But they help tell the story that he wants to tell.
Yes.
So who our experts are and who we believe becomes a very difficult thing. And so we were saying early on, you have to find those few sources that you trust.
Yes.
I no longer trust the New York Times. I used to be a subscriber.
Yes,
there was nothing in the world when I landed in New York I'd like more than to go pick up a copy of the New York Times.
Yes, it used to be the go-to. It was a prestigious thing also.
It was heavy. It was full of articles. On a Sunday, it would be 100 pages long. And that smell of ink on paper, it was hypnotic.
Yeah. Tactile.
Yeah, I wouldn't allow my dog to pee on the New York Times today. That's the level of credibility that publication has. So how do we find the sources? Because everyone is coming from an angle. We've deconstructed news into an opinion-related thing. CNN,
yes.
Left-wing opinion-related. Sky News, right-wing British opinion. Piers Morgan, the most clicks that he gets because that builds his villa in the south of France.
No, frustrating. I've watched some of his programs. I find them absolutely frustrating. I mean, he just blows with the wind. And as you said, it's clickbait. He's prepared to he's prepared to create the environment that he gets the most amount of attention. No
Candace
matter what.
Owens, I mean, she came out of Prager University.
Yes,
which used to feature.
Well, she was part of the Daily Wire.
Yes, and suddenly she's discovered how to make money. Being an anti-Semite actually really helps you make money.
Yes.
And therefore she's doing it. And so once again, who are we going to believe?
But somebody has created that environment. So if we look before October the 7th and we look at the level of anti-Semitism, it was building to a certain extent. It was building to a certain extent. Certainly in the previous decade to that, we saw disturbing signs of a growing anti-Semitism, but at a very slow pace. October the 7th accelerated everything at the end of the day. People who you wouldn't turn around and say are anti-Semitic are suddenly coming out with the most anti-Semitic postures. Quite unbelievable. And we've seen what's happening on the university campuses. Like you say, most probably orchestrated by people who know what they're doing, by capturing the youth on the universities.
Today, so the Colombian president, I don't know if you saw, tweeted out Heil Hitler.
Yeah, well, we had somebody get a song onto the top 10, did we not?
Kanye West. Singing
Heil Hitler and other things I'm not going to repeat. So it's
which is now apologized for, and we think that's okay.
Well, we don't. In a week's time, he'll change his mind. But the point being, it's become the new normal. It's not anything bad to be anti-Semitic at this stage of the game. It used to take some amount of effort to actually come up with something anti-Semitic prior to this. Now it's very easy to come out, and you're going to have quite a big following behind you. It's easy to be anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, and roll it up all into one and just conflate the one with the other.
But I want to ring two notes of caution, if I may.
Yes.
The one is, sometimes we like right-wingers because they're supportive of Israel. But, you know, once you're supporting racists,
yes,
you can't control who they're going to hate.
No.
Because they actually hate everyone. So it may be expedient for us to put backing behind people like Orban in Hungary, but you have no control over people like that.
Yeah.
In the same, people have put so much faith into Donald Trump, but he's allowed the rise of right-wing. He has normalized the rise, should we say, of right-wing racists within America.
Yes.
We need to be careful. So that's the one note that I want to say. This idea is, just because they like us today doesn't mean to say they're going to like us tomorrow.
Let's not embrace our natural enemies just because at this stage of the game they have become our unnatural allies in certain aspects. That's really what you're saying.
And the second note of caution that I wish to ring is a caution of creating an echo chamber.
Yeah.
And our community is particularly good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Within Glen Hazel, we think because we agree with something that someone says, that must be the only voice that we listen to. We don't debate. We don't argue. We don't allow dissent. There's a standard line and you follow it.
Yes.
And that's your truth. And yeah, by doing that, we blind ourselves to the reality of the world.
I've always prided myself. I thought the Jewish way, if there is a Jewish way, which I certainly think there is that we entertain different viewpoints within our community, that we don't ostracize people for having a controversial viewpoint, an uncomfortable viewpoint. We actually allow them to give vent to it, and we still embrace them at the end of the day. That's what being Jewish is all about in this community, is it not?
I think there are a lot of elements in this community who don't do that at all.
Absolutely.
Who say, it is my way or you're out.
Yeah.
And that
do you see that as a problem, Howard? Because I see that as a problem.
I think that's a huge danger to our community. Yep. Number one, we enclose ourselves in a way where we don't understand the world. We may understand Gomorrah. We may understand going to shul. We may understand what's in the Jewish report. But we don't understand the society we live in, because we blind ourselves by the demand that certain people have for sheer obedience.
Yes.
And that's an enormously destructive element within our community.
Because we're forcing a lot of these people into the opposite camp, we're not.
Correct.
Where they are embraced, for how long I don't know, because they're foolish enough to believe that they are going to now be accepted with open arms in their newfound community that are supportive of them. We're going to take a quick ad break. When we come back, I want to just discuss some of the solutions that we can find against this tide.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome back to the War Room. I'm David Katz. I'm in discussion with Howard Saxton. And I want to sum up, Howard, where we are at the moment. So I've identified that this type of social media warfare is part of a concerted military effort. It's become part of a military toolkit, actually, at the end of the day, where the kinetic action of a military is only just part of what an opposing force has to face these days. They have to face also this being blindsided by social media, just obliterating what the facts are and causing absolute confusion. And softening up the opponent so that eventually the military can go and attack a soft target. So we've looked at that aspect of it. We've also had a look at the social media not being a level playing field at all. There are some sinister forces behind it, certainly. A lot of people are being funded. A lot of people are ideologues that are going onto it, and they are propagating their point of view. And depending on how many listeners they have, that's much how power their voice is going to have. So we've looked at the different categories of social media and how it's being manipulated. How do we combat this, Howard? Though you touched on one of it, is to say, listen, I think we need to become expert at what we do. We need an inquiring mind, and we certainly need a professional skepticism when it comes to these things. But give me a toolkit now of what the layman, the ordinary person in the street, can do to be more wary of the type, where they get their news, and to be more discerning as to what's coming out of social media.
You know, if I can throw out a phrase by Otto von Clausewitz, the Prussian military strategist, he used to say diplomacy is war by other means.
Yes.
And we need to realize that today information is war by other means.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we're all soldiers in that.
Yeah.
And so you need to make a decision. Are you a passive observer or are you a soldier in that battle? And as part of that, your job is to be educated and properly educated, not just in the things that we agree with, but in an entire worldview.
Yep.
We need to understand what's important to people. We need to understand how to communicate with people. I've started in the last few months doing social media commentary, maximum three-minute things on X, Twitter, Threads, Facebook, Instagram, you name it.
Okay, the purpose of which? Tell us what you're trying to achieve there.
And I'm trying to retell the news in a way that people actually genuinely understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because by watching SABC or by watching ENCA or by listening to 702, you're not going to get the news. What's actually hiding behind it? So I'm trying to tell stories, storytelling, highly educated, entertaining, funny, communicating in entertainment, because I think that's the way we relate to the world, but to try and give people a broader understanding of what's happening.
Okay. And anger's not the answer. You've touched on it. You're using a bit of humor when it comes to these type of things. Firing back in an angry manner, you're feeding the animal, or you're not. I mean, we've identified that. These guys are looking for hits. The angrier you get, the more hits they get.
So someone contacted me the other day and said they've been following me, an investment banker in Cape Town. I have no idea who this person is. And he says, like, how are you selecting what you cover? And I said, I'm telling the stories that I want to tell. I don't care if one person views it or a million people view it, and a million people have viewed, but I'm telling the stories that we really have to tell. You have to go and find the people that you trust that will give you a broad understanding of the world. And you have to say, I'm not just a consumer of news, I'm a maker of news. And I'm going to go out there and tell the stories to the people that matter.
But first, get your house in order. What I'm saying, start with yourself, is by going to as many sources as proper as you can. Be discerning. Have a skeptical outlook on what's coming. Understand the background as to what's happening. And then go out, as you've said, maybe become a bit of a social media warrior and start making the narrative. Don't be a victim of the narrative. Start shaping the narrative according to the way you see it. Because as many opinions as you can get on a matter, that much the better. You don't allow one narrative to subsume another narrative.
And you know something? We like people who have a strong moral core. When you see something that's wrong, even when it goes against our own community, when you see Israeli settlers attacking Palestinians, you have to call that out, because you can't have one set of morals and another set of morals for something else.
Yes, absolutely.
If you're going to be a credible teller of stories,
make
sure that you don't have dual sets of morality. Tell it like it is.
Don't defend the indefensible. Is that right?
Correct.
Let's end it there. Those are beautiful words by you, Howard. Thank you very much. Thanks, Howard Saxton, for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here.